Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker. I have my co-host, Shirley Carter.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another Hot Topics.
Yes, it is an exciting show. I have an extraordinary woman on the show tonight. Her name is Lynn Jassane, but it was great seeing you in Dallas, Texas, Shirley.
Oh, in hot Dallas. They talk about hot Atlanta. That was hot Dallas. It was so good to see you, too. But the heat, I can leave that heat alone.
Yeah, the heat was, yeah, I mean, I just could not breathe. I was so glad to get home. I'm here in Florida, but we didn't have heat like that. So I am glad to be back here. But like I said, we have an extraordinary young woman on the show tonight. Her name is Lynn Jassane. She's a motivational speaker and author of a brand new book, It's Okay to Cry. Lynn, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I want to say thank you. Thank you to you. Thank you for my audience and everybody that's listening.
You, I've met you through Les Brown. He wrote the foreword to your book.
Yes, he did.
And then the subtitle is When the Odds Are Against You, It's Okay to Cry. And I know from reading about you that, you know, you were pregnant in the ninth grade. How old is that, 14 or 15?
Yeah, I was 14 at the time.
Okay, you became pregnant 14, and then you wound up in the foster care system?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It all happened at the same
time. And Child Protective Service, foster care.
Yeah, Lynn. A teen mother, foster care. Yeah, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're talking about the odds that I beat, some of the odds.
Yeah, you know, your book is called It's Okay to Cry. So I have a copy of it, and it's a very nice cover on it, and it has a little black girl there with little tears in her eyes. And I know when I was growing up, I know when I used to get beatings, I can't say spanking, I used to get beat. My parents need to be just being out on parole. They should have been locked up the way they used to handle me. And I was looking at the cover and I was like, wow, it reminds me of me being a little girl and stuff. And your parents would tell you, don't cry, don't cry. But your book said it's okay to cry. Talk about that.
I mean, it's okay because a lot of times, number one, we need to understand the energy that it takes to create a tear. It's not just some simple thing because energy is behind everything we do. And it takes a lot of energy to produce a tear, and we're taught to conceal that energy, but it's going to come back out. Now, sometimes it don't come out how people like it to come out. So when we're dealing with feelings and emotions, then we just need to be understand how it's okay to release them. Because once we release them, and if we learn to release them in the right way, then it gives us more power over how we deal with our feelings and our emotions. So tears are evoked out of feelings and emotions, so we should be able to release them and not hold them back.
But, you know, overcoming the odds that you were up against, being in foster care, being a teen mother, and then you not only had one child in foster care, you wound up having a second. Is that correct?
Yes, and a third. Yes, I did.
Oh, you had three children in foster care.
Yes, it was three before I aged out. It was three.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So, you know, talk about that journey and how you ever overcame that, because you have a BA and an MBA degree, and we have individuals who didn't have those odds stacked up against them. They graduated high school, went on to college, and still have done nothing with their lives. How did you pull yourself out from the situation you were under, and then want, you know, even have the heart and the passion to educate yourself? How was that process?
Well, let's look at some statistics, okay? So when we think about a teen mother, statistics will indicate they're going to drop out of high school, a small percent go to college, a high percent end up unmarried, they end up on welfare. With my situation, I didn't even have any credits my ninth grade year, because that's when I got pregnant. And let's look at some statistics for foster children. They say a small percent go to college. Females are more likely to be on public assistance. Higher percent of foster children end up unemployed. They're most likely to abuse or neglect their own children. And typically within 2 years after aging out, they're either homeless, incarcerated, unemployed. So when we look at the statistics, what that says alone about a teen mother and a foster child, and you look at my situation and say, okay, that doesn't have to apply to me. And that was my drive, you know, hearing what people said about me, the stereotypes of foster children, the things they say about teen mothers. Usually, you know, when people say it got back to me, and I just took that energy and said, you know what, I made a mission to prove I'm wrong. And I also wanted to be an example to young women and young girls when we going through stuff, because stuff is going to happen. We can't deny that, okay? So, you know, you growing up trying to find your way and trying to figure out what you want to do with yourself and with kids at the same time. So as I went through these things, I wanted to be able to share that you don't have to succumb to what anybody says about you, or you're not what they say about you, or you're not the things you have to get out your head, because we've been told so much negative stuff so long. You have to undo that. It's like a reconditioning your mind to be able to come up out of situations. So my purpose was to say, okay, this is what I went through, but that's not me. That's not who I am. You know, I'm not fast. I just did some things that people can define as fast. I'm not a misfit. I'm not a dropout. I am somebody who can leave my mark on this earth and say, I'm not going to be a liability. I'm going to be an asset. And so
okay,
that's what I wanted to be able to.
Foster care, and you had foster parent or parents. And
I just had one foster parent.
So how did they undergird you, you know, them taking you in and then you becoming pregnant? How was that transitioning? How was the relationship between the two of you?
Well, she was really, my foster mom was really in the church. So what happens when she was in the church and she traveled a lot with the church, then I was allowed to stay with people that allowed me to do some of the things I want to do, because I never did school. So I wasn't missing school to go hang out with somebody, but when she would go out of town, she would allow me to stay with people that allowed me access to, you know, the guys that I was hanging out with, the guy that I was seeing. So it just created opportunities, because she was absent because of church a lot. She was absent a lot. And that's a key thing when we identify in teen pregnancy. It's a lack of supervision somewhere. It's a lack of not knowing what's going on, not what they're involved in. We never even talked about birth control. She assumed I didn't want to do it because I already had kids, and I assumed she just didn't want to talk to me about it. So we never talked about it when I lived with her. We did after, but we didn't talk about birth control while I lived with her. And that's key, because you think people understand what their options are, but they don't. You think they know because the world has taught them something. But they don't be knowing. Children, it's a lot of information they don't have that adults assume that they know or have. And you'll be surprised at the children that don't know what they don't know, regardless of what their lifestyle is,
so,
or what they're doing.
So your foster parent wound up raising you and then raising the children you had. Were they all in the same foster parent, or did they move you afterwards?
No, we stayed in one house. We was able to stay together, and we was able to stay in one foster home. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they didn't shift you to another home because you became pregnant?
No. I mean, because that's the only thing that, if you wanted to say I did something wrong, other than that, I didn't do anything. I focused on getting through school. I wasn't a back talker. I wasn't I mean, I just was looking for love in all the wrong places and doing what I thought it would take to, you know, make somebody want to be with me. I was young.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that, looking for love in all the wrong places, because women do that all the time. They're broken and looking for someone to bring healing to that which hurts. So talk about that and the aspect of, if you were talking to your younger self, what encouragement would you give to your younger self?
Well, we can hear all the time, know your worth, but then I always am not afraid to say that I was childish and immature. So when we understand what childish means and what being immature means, then I didn't have the mental capacity to even handle what I was trying to do. You know, so if nobody never educated me, never talked to me about it, never told me that I was worth anything, nobody's supervising me, nobody's paying attention to who I'm hanging out with, then it, you're learning from other people. And then if you're hanging around people that's ending up pregnant, then, oh, it must be okay. Then you have a guy that's either promising you to do things that you can't get at home, telling you things that you want to hear, making you feel a way that you've never felt. So you go along with what comes along with that. In my book, I talk about being 12 and being involved with a man that was 21 years old. And I talk about why. Why would a 12-year-old think it's okay to hang out with a man that's 21 years old and then think it's okay to sleep with him? And I talk about that because it's a lot involved in just, oh, she's 12, sleeping with a grown man. You got a man promising to do things that you know your mom can't do. There's no dad, nobody supervising you, telling you not, you can't be outside at certain times at night. You can't get in a car with a man. I mean, it's just a lot. So if I was talking to my younger self, I would say, you know, don't put myself in situations that I can't get out of. And talking to my younger self, I would say, don't do anything now that, you know, that might cause you long-term harm in the future. If I was talking to my younger self, I would say, I'm better than that. I'm worth more than just someone who wants to sleep with me but can't promise me a future, who can't even take care of themselves at the same time, because we were all kids. And then understanding that I matter. You know, I matter. So what happens is important. The moves I make matter. Understanding that I'm going through school. What should I be valuing in school? The textbooks, trying to learn some social skills, trying to develop some techniques and skills that say, okay, I'm going to take a leadership class at school. I want to participate in the club at school. All those things are important when you're going up through the school system, because it's the prime years. But nobody told me what was important, what was not important, how this can help me when I got at this certain age. I think those are things that I wasn't being told or given an understanding about. So I just moved through life the best way I knew how and did the things that I felt was working for me and not long-term for that moment.
What was your aha moment when you said to yourself, I'm worth it, I want more? I don't want to just be a teen mother and just keep having babies and, you know, relationship to relationship. When was it that you finally said to yourself, enough is enough?
As an adult, I was probably in my late 20s when I was dealing with a male, and I had told him no in regards to having sex with him. And the power it gave me when I said no, I will never forget it, because I felt like I was defending myself. And as a child,
okay,
if you grew up thinking
let me interrupt you for a moment. Let me interrupt you for a moment. You said that when you told this man no, that gave you your power back. That's when you kind of stood up statuesque and said, this is enough. So all before, why did you find it difficult to say no?
Because my mind was like, this is what I had to do to make them like me. Like, this is a part of making somebody want me and want to be with me. So I have sex with them because this is what they want. And when you're young, you're immature. You don't understand. So you just go along with it. And then when I got an adult and I said no, that was the first time I said, it does not take me to have sex with a man to make him want me. It does not take that. And I had came out of like a 13-year relationship. When that happened for me, it was after a 13-year relationship.
With one of your children's father?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My fourth son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I came out of a 13-year relationship.
So you saying no, and you just, it just like something just stood up in you where you were like, I want more, I'm better than that. So does that mean at that particular time, you said you're transcending out of a long-term relationship, were you more fed up with what you came out of or more than what you were going into? Because I know people have asked me several times what made me come out of my abusive situation, and I said I feared my present state more than I feared my future. So that's what made me, what caused a shift in me. I wanted out. So was that kind of like the same thing for you?
Yeah, it was like, but learning how to value yourself too. It's like after coming out of a relationship and understanding what all I felt I gave, all I felt I sacrificed, all I was willing to sacrifice, and that moment when I realized I would never sacrifice myself for a man again. The things, you know, a lot of things that I'd done trying to be something, like I was never a wife, but I conducted myself like a wife in any relationship I was in. So it was like, no, like, you have to earn that from me. You have to earn for me to be able to treat you a certain way. You're just not going to get that from me anymore. No. That's how I started feeling.
Why did you entitle your book, It's Okay to Cry?
Because that was my, if you want to say drugs and alcohol, that was my way of releasing. That was my way of, when things happened, dealing with it. I didn't want to turn to drugs and alcohol. I didn't turn to anger. Because when people are going through stuff and they're feeling a certain way, they look for something for comfort. And crying became, because I would cry to God. Like, he was my source. Like, nobody would understand what I'm thinking or feeling, but I knew he would. So he was my source. So the crying was mostly crying to him. But I would cry, just cry my way through it. And I remember listening to a tape when I was younger, because I didn't understand what speaking women speaking about. But the Carruthers sisters were talking, gave a speech, and they talked about valuing yourself. And I never forget listening to some of that, because back then everything was on tape. But I remember just listening to some key points that they made about loving yourself and making sure that you identify your worth for yourself when you're dealing with other people. And I didn't quite get it back then, but those are the things I would hear when I would cry and try to let that play in my head just so I can bring myself some comfort. Listening to tapes and stuff, I've always self-motivated because there was nobody in my family to do it.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. How did you transition to be the motivational speaker that you are at this particular time?
Because, number one, it comes naturally for people to either talk to me about their problems. It just comes naturally. And I would find that when they got finished speaking to me, they always felt better. I always gave them an answer to make them feel better, an answer that they could understand or relate to. So it just kind of came natural. And then I realized that, you know what, that's important to be able to build people up or give somebody some information that they're struggling through and let them see. I can give an example. I went to speak at the prison, and the ladies in the prison was asking me questions, and, you know, I don't have a criminal background. But what I was able to share with them is if they said, you know, well, my parental rights got terminated, and me knowing what statistics say about children who age out the foster care, I said, a piece of paper doesn't make you a non-parent. The whole room started crying because they didn't look at it like that. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you could see, well, my kid get out, I can't be available. I can't be a resource for them. Even if I can't get to them now, but it's going to be a time they may need me. So don't just counsel yourself out as a parent over a piece of paper. And the whole room started crying. I don't know what their issues was, but I knew in that moment, my words are powerful, and I speak life into people. It just comes natural.
Yeah, and you're full circle, and now you work for Child Protective Services.
Oh, yeah, I made 20 years in May. Made 20 years. Mm-hmm.
So why did you go into that field?
I was encouraged. It was interesting because I was working as a manager at a convenience store, and one of the ladies that always came in the store, she would be like, "We need you. We need," you know, she would always say. And then an incident happened at the store that made me pursue. She was like, "I'm going to tell you exactly what to do." And I went and did exactly what she did. And that's how it happened. That's how that, because I remember some of the things I went through, I wasn't sure I would even want to be a part of the system in no way. But she kept saying, "They need you. They need women like you. They need people like you that care for people. You care about people." So that's how I ended up getting involved in the system.
So you compassion know, you're strategically, for you're strategically placed in a situation where you can birth individuals into their destiny and to the goals and promises that God had ordained for them. So how has that been? Do you find it more of a ministry and not work?
Well, it's funny you use the word ministry, because ministry is interpreted in many different levels. But when you grow up in a church, you only think you can do ministry if you sit at the pulpit. But I believe ministry comes upon us anytime we're given an opportunity to speak life into people. It's a form of ministry. You know, I had a 12-week mentorship program that grew. By the time I got to the 12 weeks, I went from 7 girls to over 20 girls. So ministry is just, it's a part of who I am. I've always, even when I was younger, people used to be like, "You think you've grown, you think you know everything." But it was only coming from a place where I could always speak life into people or always say something that would encourage or motivate somebody to feel better, even with what all I had been through. So,
For those of you that have just tuned in, I am speaking with motivational speaker and author, Coach Lynn Jessames, and she is the author of a new book. It is called It's Okay to Cry When the Odds Are Against You. She has a BA and an MBA, and she is definitely a living testimony of what is possible. Now, Lynn, we have ladies nationally and internationally listening in, and they're like, okay, they barely made it out of high school, they have children, they have a husband, and they feel stuck in life. What would you say were some action steps that you took to allow you to be the extraordinary woman that you are today?
Well, some of the things that pulled me out of being stuck is, number one, that I was focused. I spent a lot of time with myself, so I didn't have a lot of distractions, because by the time I heard the rumors, it made me want to stay away from people, but it also helped me to get focused, because if you're around people who's not interested in the things you want to do, then they become a distraction from what you're trying to do. So for me, it was, you know what, I'm going to make up my mind and make some commitments to where I want to be. So I also believe is huge. You have to believe in yourself. If you have what I call the yearning, if you have this desire that says, you know what, if something telling you you're supposed to be great or you're supposed to do this huge thing or you're going to make an impact, you have to believe it, because no one's going to believe anything that you're trying to do if you don't believe it yourself. And you can't bring it to life, because if you can't believe it, you can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't touch it, then it's not real. So believing is really key for anybody's trying to do anything, is you believe in that thing you're trying to accomplish. Like back then, I remember saying, I know if I just get an education, I'll get a good job. I didn't even know what that looked like, but I vowed that I have to get an education. And I knew, too, one of my factors was a lot of people I knew wasn't finishing high school or finishing college. So that was another thing to say, you know what, they're not going to do it, but I'm going to do it. The main ones that said I couldn't do it still haven't done it. So that gave me some energy and some juice, too, to say, you know what, I'm going to prove to them that I can do it. But through proving, it manifests my destiny, too, because even through trying to prove something, I'm not a prideful woman. But through me trying to prove some things to people, my destiny still manifested itself.
Awesome. You know, I do affirmations and I do quotes to keep me empowered. And one of my favorite quotes is by Les Brown, and it says, and this is one of the first quotes that I ever heard him say, and I tell you, it just spoke life into me. And any time I felt like giving up or giving out, I would remember he said, in order to be successful, you must be willing to do the things today others won't do in order to have the things tomorrow others won't have. I was a single mother raising, for I was divorced and raising four children, and I just was like, I thought life was over for me. But then I knew inside of me I wanted to be successful. And it seems like when he said, in order to be successful, you must be willing to do, that mean that motivated me to know that I had to put in the work. What,
yes. Yes.
What was your one of your quotes that keeps you driven?
Well, I have a lot of them too. But I love Harriet Tubman. She has a quote, and it says,
oh, I love
always
her.
Remember you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars, and you can change the world. And I know it took some strength, it took some patience, and my passion to get me where I'm at. It took, those were some fine key characteristics that I held on to, is I had to have some strength, I had to be patient, and I had to pursue the things that I was passionate about. So that's one of mine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's good.
What is a personal quote that you have that you created and that you've been using to empower and inspire lives?
Well, that's a quote when I say, when the odds are against you, beat them. Like, that's really big for me because I have a couple of things that I know I've overcome that when you look at the statistics and information behind those things that have happened, I'm just the totally opposite. And an example would be women who have strokes, girls who grow without their fathers. The things that they say, a child that grows up without her father, you know, she struggles with anger, resentment. She has very bad dysfunctional behaviors. That's not me. That's just an example. But another quote that I have, that there's no odd bigger than God. In other words, there's nothing
I cannot face that
God cannot get me over. That's one of my favorite. There's no odd that is bigger than God. And I remember that. I tell myself that when I'm going through something, I'm going to get through this because it's not bigger than him.
That's awesome. Now, I know you and Shirley were talking earlier about, you know, one of your books that you have in there dealing with health issues. So, Shirley.
Yes. I'm listening to you, Lynn. Thank you so much for being so transparent. And one of the things that, you know, with all that you've gone through, what is there something that you do daily to help stay focused? How do you stay focused? You have a lot that you've gone through. You have a lot that you're doing for others, but how do Lynn stay focused and stay on point?
Well, I have stuff that I read every day. I have a good library of stuff that I've read, motivational stuff. Yolanda Van Zandt is one of my number one authors because of things that she's written. So I remember those stuff in those books, and that's the stuff that's in my head. And so I listen to certain type of music. Like, I love Closer to My Dreams by Guapalé. You know, I listen to that song a lot. I listen to I think his name is Mr. Williams. He has a song called, dang, it's not even coming to me. He has a song called It's My Season. I listen to music like that because it keeps me motivated and encouraged. And then I see the eyes of my children because that's what helped me growing up too, just looking into my children's eyes, knowing that they deserve a way, that opportunity that I was given growing up as a child. So they keep me motivated and focused. To this day, I want to make sure that my grandchildren have a better opportunity than even my children had. So those are the things that keep me focused. I listen to music. I got quotes. I got affirmations. And key, you got to have friends that are doing the things that you want to do. You got to communicate with people that speak your language, that believe in you too, that can speak life into you. I just had a woman come into my life recently, and she has been more powerful in my life over the last 6 months than I had prior to her coming into my life. It's just the things that I've accomplished within 6 months that I wouldn't have been able to accomplish without her because of her. She made a commitment to me. She made a commitment to see me successful, and it's made a difference in how I conduct myself when it comes to business and getting the things done that I want to do, even in spite of all that I've accomplished. Her name is Miss Jamish, but she has been powerful. When you have powerful people in your life, you have to straighten up your own back and meet their expectations as well as your own, because they do that for you. You don't even it comes natural. You wanna. I have a quote in the front of my book, thinking, you know, it's by Abraham Lincoln, and he says, "I had a friend that I did not want to let down." And even going through foster care, the way my college counselor helped me, I didn't want to let her down, so I graduated. My caseworker believed in me and gave me an opportunity. What statistics said about teen moms, and I had three, she could have left my kids in foster care and told me I need to go get myself together. She allowed my kids to come with me. That said to me, she was willing to give me a chance. I didn't want to let her down. So when you have people who you know believe in you, you don't want to let them down as well as yourself. So that's very important. Your friends, very key. Now I get that now that I have people who really believe me, for me, want to see me be successful, because you don't understand it, but you don't have it. And so that's key, people. Is, you know, just find somebody who really, and those are people you reach out to and talk to and make a part of your everyday process. I didn't understand, get the energy drainers out your life. I do now.
Wonderful.
I do now.
And when we were speaking earlier, we were talking about, you spoke about finding the lump. Can you share with our audience that you have a book out about it? Because as a survivor myself in having a nonprofit called Against All Odds, and then your subtitle is Against the Odds, can you share with them some of the a little bit about your book, and then see, you know, because we have
the one that's coming next.
All one. Yeah.
You
know,
next book. Well, in the next book, I had experienced finding the lump in my breast. And this is how powerful the mind is. Because from the minute I found the lump, mentally I had killed myself. Because I already said I got breast cancer and I'm going to die. And so in the book, I transcend from, okay, I found the lump, and then I'm taking you through the everyday process of, okay, I'm going to go to the doctor, but they're going to diagnose me with it. Like, I take you through those feelings and emotions, and then I'm in the doctor's office, and the way the lady acted with the results, I'm like, oh, my gosh, she really found something, but she haven't even talked yet. Our mind is so powerful, and it puts us in places that if we're not able to learn to control our thoughts and recondition ourselves, we already have ourselves defeated. And that experience taught me how powerful my mind can be just in my own self-destruction. So in the next book, I talk about that, and I go deep in detail about how I was feeling, and now I'm going to die, I'm going to leave my kids, and it's too big. I didn't even know what size it was. And then she found another one, but it wasn't the one that I found, so I killed myself twice. And, yeah, the mind, we need to be careful and learn how to – negative thoughts will come. But it's a matter of what we do with them when we come and how we learn to counteract them immediately and shoot them right down, because it's power in that in and of itself. That has helped me too. Because you grow up with negativity, you got to retrain them thoughts. So, yeah, I share that in that next book because it's important for us to understand how powerful our mind can be, because I have really did a lot of self-destruction and over 60 days. It affected how I was a function and everything, but it was the way I was thinking. Because I didn't have breast cancer.
Wow. So over 60 days, you were able to, just from finding that lump, diagnose yourself and go through the whole process in your mind. And see, I talk to people a lot about that. Your mind is a very powerful being, that it can control you. So thank you for sharing that with us, because a lot of people don't understand the part and the role that a mind can take over you, and mind can be out of control, because I actually have a chapter in my book, you know, about mind control and everything. And so in my particular book, I have Inside the Mind of a Woman and the Soul of a Man, and I speak on that about how the mind can be out of control. wonderful. Thank you so much for that. But let me ask you this. What makes you happy? What makes you happy?
Well, number one, when my children are doing good, I'm happy. When the children are on point, you know, fulfilling their dreams, accomplishing their goals, and yes, I'm fine. That's one of the things that do make me happy. I'm happy when I hang up from a phone call, when somebody calls me, and I know they're feeling better. That makes me happy. I'm happy when I feel like I've overcome some things that I've been struggling with. I'm happy when I'm watching the things that I'm learning and teaching people. I'm watching them manifest in my own life. Those are things that make me happy. I'm happy when I have a glass of wine and I could just relax and take a moment to breathe and take some really good deep breaths and feel free in that space. Those are things that make me. It's just really simple. It's really simple. Just knowing that I'm growing as a woman, this makes me happy in and of itself, because it was a journey to get to where I am right now. It was a journey to embrace the woman that I've became and the things that I'm able to accomplish in life, knowing that a lot of people didn't see it for me, and it took me a while to see it for myself. So.
Wonderful.
I have people that want to know, how can I get a copy of her book? How can they find you, Lynn?
Well, my website is www.lynne, spelled L-Y-N-N-E, Jasames, spelled J-A-S-A-M-S-N-Mary-E-S.com. So it's my name, www.lynnejasames.com. They can go to my website and get it, and it's also at Amazon.com.
Okay. So
and for locally,
what's next for Lynn?
Locally, too.
Huh?
I'm sorry. I was going to say locally.
So what's next for you?
Oh, more books, more speeches, more traveling, more mentoring, more love. More love, that's what I want to, just more love, that's what's next for me.
Talk about love. What does love mean to you?
It means being in a place where the things that once tore me down, they don't tear me down anymore, because I love me. And the more I love me, the more I'm able to love other people, no matter what they do to me, no matter what they're going through. And the more I love me, it helps me when I'm interacting with other people and I'm trying to help somebody overcome something. Because of where I'm at, I'm able to be even more effective. And I do things with more level of confidence that I have before. I don't need nobody to assure me anymore because of the way I feel about myself. And I know I love people. That's never been a question. So loving me is helps me to love more. And that's why I say loving me. So more love is more projected towards me, so I can give it to other people just on different levels and in different ways, because it's forever changing. I'm forever becoming a better woman in all areas of my life, especially at this time in my life. So many shifts are taking place. So that's why I say love to me is loving me. It helps me be able to give love. Because when you're having a bad day, if you're not loving yourself, that day going to tear you down. And I've been able to get past some things that previously I couldn't do. I would get stuck. It would take me a while to come out of it. So I'm able to come out of stuff a lot quicker, a lot faster, with a better understanding. So that's what it's looking like for me right now. I see the sun different. I hear birds that I didn't hear before. The moon looks different. A quote sounds different. Like, things that I've been, because of where I'm at, life is looking different. And it's more beautiful every day. And that can only come from inside.
Awesome.
Can't nobody do that for you. Can't nobody do that for you.
That is awesome. You know, as we go through this journey, this game we call life, we find ourselves, especially being women, we have so many oppositions to go through, but yet we're the most exquisite creatures on the planet. There's nobody like us, and no one can know us or define us, but we define ourselves. You know, that love you talk about and that inner strength and power to beat the odds, even though, you know, statistics would say that you wouldn't amount to anything and your children wouldn't amount to anything, you're still standing, you're still growing strong, and you're such a beautiful young lady, too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And if we have a minute, I want to share. I had got this email a couple of times. And, you know, when you're struggling to figure out who you are and why you do the things you do, one time this email kind of resonated with me. And from then on, I looked at my rationale behind crying as different. And so if I can just share this, it's like a little poem. I'm going to share it. It's called Why Women Cry. So one day a little boy asked his mother, "Why are you crying?" She said, "Because I'm a woman." He was like, "I don't understand." She just hugged him and said, "You never will." Later, the little boy asked his father, "Why do mothers seem to cry all the time for no reason?" His father replied, "All women cry all the time for no reason." That was all his dad could say to the little boy. As the little boy grew up and became a man, and as he aged, he still would wonder why women cry. So finally, he got on his knees and he prayed to God. And when he felt a connection with God, he asked God, "Why do women cry so easily?" And this is what God said. God said, "When I made a woman, she was special. I made her shoulders strong enough to carry the weight of the world, yet gentle enough to give comfort. I gave her inner peace to endure childbirth and the rejection that many times will come from her children. I gave her a hardness that allows her to keep going when everyone seems to give up on her. She will take her family through sickness, through fatigue, and she won't complain. I also gave her sensitivity to love her children under any and all circumstances, even when the children would hurt her badly." He said, "I gave her strength to carry her husband and her mate through his faults and fashioned him from his rib to protect his heart. But I gave her wisdom to know that a good husband will never hurt his wife. But sometimes he will test her will and her strength and her resolve to stand behind him no matter what." Here's the piece. "And finally, I gave her a tear to shed. Now this tear is hers exclusively, and I gave it to her when she needed it." And he says, "You see, my son, the beauty of a woman is not in the clothes she wears, the figure she carries, or the way she combs her hair, but the beauty of a woman must be seen in her eyes, because that's the doorway to her heart, and that's where her love resides." That was powerful for me.
Wow. That was powerful for me. You need to send me a copy of that.
I sure will.
Make that too,
Shirley. Wasn't that awesome?
Yes, I said make that two copies.
And it's in the book. It's in the book. I talk about
something,
and I go into that piece after I had got finished praying. And, yeah, so that piece is very powerful. If you can just understand the meaning behind it, that helped me a lot, because crying is just my way of release, and I don't want to build up anything, and I want to let it out. So that's how I release. And so far,
it's
worked
for
me. If you go to, it's in the part that comes, let me see. It's right in the section of the introduction. And it's on the 4th page of the introduction.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that means, listeners, in order to get this, you're going to have to order her book at lynnjustsayings.com. Now, Lynn, spell your name for them so that they can write it down.
Okay, it's L-Y-N-N, that's N as in Nancy, N-N-E, and just Sayings, J, A as in Apple, S as in Sam, A as in Apple, M as in Mary, E-S, lynnjustsayings.com.
And you're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, yes, I am. And everything is under Lynn Jasames, except for my Twitter is at okay to cry. Okay, the number 2, cry. That's how I'm on Twitter.
Okay. And I listen, audience, I'm talking to Lynn Jasames, motivational speaker, author, coach. and she holds a BA and MBA even after becoming pregnant at 14 years old, and she is the mother of four young boys, and she continued her education even against all odds. Now, Lynn, as I keep saying, there's so many women that keep saying, I can't, I can't, I can't. And they feel like if they have one child, they can't. They have two child, they definitely can't. And then the third child, they say, oh, forget about it. I'm definitely not going to be able to do anything. But yet you plow through it. You plow through it. You plow through it. And, you know, like I said, you're a beautiful young lady. And, you know, you've accomplished some personal goals in your life. And you've met some extraordinary individuals as well. So who was the most powerful person you met that caused a shift in your life?
Oh, someone I actually met? Oh, okay. Well, I would say my high school counselor. And the reason why is because when I went into foster care, I had the baby. It all happened at the same time. So going into foster care, me and I got separated from my mom. So a lot of things happened at the same time. But my high school counselor, and that's where it starts. When you can identify with one person, you feed off that. And she looked at me and she said, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure you graduate from high school because you have
wow.
so many things against you. And I'm going to do whatever it takes. You just make sure you do your part. And she helped pay for summer classes. I was in early bird classes because, remember, I had no credits my ninth grade year, too, and I graduated on time with my senior class. So she
wow.
was the first person who made me see that someone can believe in me. That was my high school counselor. Her name was Julia Rutledge. From Las Vegas High School, she did it for me.
Mm.
It was her. Because she said, you don't ever have
it's
any breaks, so I'm going to give
thing.
You a break. Yes.
It's a wonderful
yes.
thing when you have teachers that are still on point doing their thing and making a difference in a child's life.
Yeah, but that's important for us as teachers also is to understand the power that we have working with young people and even young men and young women. It could take one act of kindness, one positive word. You know, I love how Maya Angelou saying, people will forget what you said, but they will not forget how you made them feel. And she made me feel like I could do it. When she told me she'll help me graduate from high school, I knew I could. And it was the way she made me feel about it because I felt like I could do this. I got somebody who's going to help me. I could do it. Yes, very powerful when you can do that one little small thing that makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm.
How important is it to stay consistent?
Oh, consistency, it is a part of help you stay focused, you know, consistency. I'm going to give you a good example. I have a grandbaby who's been playing football since he's only 7, but he's been involved in football, listen to this, since he was young because that's what his dad has been a coach since he was born. And I was just telling somebody the importance of consistency because when I listened to the Gabrielle Douglas story, she also was consistent with wanting to be a professional gymnastist since she was little. It was consistency that got her to where she is. Right now, the level that my grandbaby played football on is amazing, but he's done that one thing since he was little. So it starts when you're little, the power of being consistent. So I was consistent with going to high school, finishing. I was consistent with saying if I could finish high school, I can get a college degree. When I got the first college degree, it told me I can get a graduate degree. You see what consistency does? It carries you, and it keeps you going on a certain path that you won't stray from because you know where you're going. And sometimes it's not clear. I'm not going to make it seem like it was all clear, but because those main things that I said I wanted to do, and I say true and consistent to that, it took me right in the direction I needed to be going. It just led me right through the journey. So watching him, I'm telling you, if they was drafting for the NBA right now at 7, he's going. He can read a play.
Oh, wow.
But he's been doing that. since he was little. He stayed with that one thing. He wasn't a football player today, doing karate tomorrow, doing basketball. And it showed me, wow, the power of sticking to one thing. And then it reminded me of the Gabby story. She stayed and stuck to one thing. And look at the outcome of that. So it's important. Consistency is very important.
Do you believe that everyone has a purpose?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And I'm going to tell you who helped me realize that. Oprah Winfrey talked about being born under a unique set of circumstances. So, you know, her parents wasn't in a relationship. They wasn't married. It happened under an oak tree in a poodle skirt. Them the characteristics of what she was born under. And you see what what came out of that situation? Well, I was born under a unique set of circumstances, too. So when I think about the circumstances under which I was born, I was like, wow, when she explained it, I was like, I'm meant to be here. It's a sense of understanding we're all meant to be here. So if I'm meant to be here, why? Because there's a lot of people that don't make it. You know, they die young, parents having abortions, tragedies are happening. So the time I have on this earth, I believe I'm meant to be here, so how am I going to contribute to making society a better place, contributing to building people to become better people, to be a part of a system that is united and saying this can be a better place for everybody. We just have to be proactive in trying to make it. And our better place can just be the things that's around us. You get to trying to go too big, but when you can master the things around you, it'll eventually start growing into other areas. And you see what I'm saying? So what you can do with a small thing, it can become big.
Were you ever ridiculed at 14 being pregnant? That's another thing that could have stopped you and hindered you, but yet you kept on going against the odds. How was it then, you know, especially with your foster mother being in the church? Did you have to go through opposition verbally, emotionally with the church folks, the kingdom, as well as the secular?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Most of the ridicule came from close people, believe it or not, though. And I believe because of my personality is why most of it got back to me. I don't think most of it came maliciously. Most of it came from, well, why would they say that about you? Because you're not like that. And they just was, you know, sharing. But what it created was the desire to do better. I took that. And like right now, given what all people know about me, if I went and did something bizarre, there's a group of people that would be like, but you got to understand because of what she went through. I didn't buy into that. I'm not going to let, quote, crutches in life make me start doing things or lashing out against society because things aren't going my way or don't look how they should look, or I had to go through some things to get to where I am. But it's not; it doesn't give me the right or excuse to become, you know, become a liability to society. Let me use that terminology. And, you know, create things that would make it harder for other people because of my actions. I never let that be an excuse. Like, I've never done anything like slash people tires, broken people window out of being angry, and, you know, did backlash to people. Never. Because it's no need for that. And to me, that harbors, and I think certain health conditions are developed out of carrying stuff that serves us no purpose to carry. You know, somebody told me, I went to a high school reunion, and the guy looked at me, and I think I was like 35, and he was like, oh, my God, you look the same. He was like, your body doesn't develop. And he was like, Lynn, you look the same. And I asked him, I said, well, what do you think that is? He said, knowing how you was in high school, he said, I bet you forgive easy. That's what he told me. And I said to myself, know what I said to myself? Yep, I forgive easy. And I took that. And I forgive. I don't hold on to stuff. If I have to cry it out of me, I'm going to cry it out of me. But I think that, you know, holding stuff and carrying stuff and being angry and being mad and placing blame and forgive. Forgive is huge because when we can forgive other people, we can forgive ourselves. And the things that has happened to us, we can move past it a lot easier and a lot quicker. than blaming people for stuff that we just need to take responsibility and ownership of for ourselves.
Yeah, I used to tell my kids when we were going through our journey and trying to reposition ourselves for the life that we've lived, is that, you know, don't act up and act a fool and out of character because people's opinions of you make you feel less than. I said the best way to get back at them is to be successful. Focus all your energy on being the best person you can be. I said, because at the end of the day, they'll be asking you for a dime, not you asking them. So that's what I want you to do. Stay focused, stay diligent, and in the midst of it, love.
Yeah,
and you know,
and forgiveness,
and forgiveness. Yeah, and continue being a giver. You know, because those same individuals that talk and throw stones, they'll be knocking at your door saying, "Can you help a brother out?"
But you know what else I learned to do? Seriously, I've learned to laugh. Just laugh, just laugh. I can look at some things, and even as hurtful as they may be, I can laugh. Laugh and smile no matter what. Laugh. Learn to take it lightheartedly. Learn to be free from it, but laugh. That energy from laughing is way better.
Well, I'm sure Shirley can attest to a lot of the things that you've said and, you know, that I've been through. Because like I said, women are relentless. We're master survivors. We know beat the odds at any cost. And like I said, the best way of getting back at those who throw stones is to be the best person you can be.
Yes.
Forgive
yes.
and walk with your head up high. And
yes.
I've been interviewing Lynn Jussain. So, Lynn, you can give them your information once again.
Okay. It's Lynn Jussain, LynnJassames.com. And you go to my website, it gives you all the information. It's a lot of detailed information about me and what I'm doing, the things I'm involved in, and things like that. It's all on the website. And I have stuff on my Facebook page, stuff on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn also. It's Lynn Jussain. And remember, Twitter is at OK to Cry. It's OK, the number 2, and cry. I'm on Twitter, but everything else is under Lynn Jussain.
Thank you so much for joining us on Hot Topics from the Soul. So, listening audience, make sure you go to her website and get her book, hit her up on Facebook, and let her know that you heard her on the show. And also download the show and forward it to a friend or loved one or someone that you know may be going through a situation. Let them know that Lynn Jussain have been through some things in her life, and she survived them. And she is the author of a book called It's Okay to Cry. A lot of times we go through situations and circumstances, and we hold it all in, afraid to shed a tear because our parent or someone said they don't want us crying. Keep your head up. Don't let anybody see you break. But it's okay. You can cry and fight your way to success. Because that's what life is all about, beating the odds. God gave you every single thing you need to make it to the next level because we were all born on purpose for a purpose. As that quote says, God didn't make any junk. So I invite you to visit my website, fromthesoullevelwoman.com, and there you will find the books that I've written. And also, if you would click in and buy Unlimited Possibilities, Walking in Purpose, and that will help you shift into the next level. And also, Shirley Carter's book is also on her website, and you can connect with her through Facebook as well. So one of my quotes that I've written, and I'm so happy about it, and I wish the listening audience will hold on to it. It simply says, love affects our past, our present, and our future. Love is an emotion, a gift given to us from God, and it should never ever hurt. Lynn, thank you so much for being my guest, and we look
forward
to having you back soon. And thank you, Shirley Carter, for being my co-host and sitting in every week. Peace and blessings until next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Good night, and God bless.